Out in paperback this month, a provocative book from venture capitalist Bruce Cannon Gibney. Gibney helped fund PayPal, Facebook, Airbnb, and SpaceX. He's in his late 30s and is taking aim at the baby boomer generation. He began looking into why American technology wasn't improving as fast as it did in the 50s and why the Great Recession was lasting so long, and his research led him to the boomers and the economic and political policies they put in place over the past few decades. Bruce Cannon Gibney's book is called A Generation of Sociopaths: How the Baby Boomers Betrayed America. I spoke with him when it was first published. And I want to just read you first just a line from your introduction here. You say, for the past several decades, the nation has been run by people who present personally and politically the full sociopathic pathology: deceit, selfishness, imprudence, remorselessness, hostility, the works. These people are the baby boomers, the vast and strange generation born between 1940 and 1964, and the society they created does not work very well. So explain. Why do you say that? Why do you call them sociopaths?
So the reason why I call them sociopaths is because as a generation, as individuals, they are like every group, a mixed bag. But as a generation, they display the classic clinical indicators of antisocial personality disorder, which used to be known in a less PC way as sociopathy. So, for example, improvidence is a key sociopathic indicator, and we can see that in the national data based on cohort savings levels and national savings levels, which have been in significant decline since the 1970s when the boomers first entered the workforce. We can also see it in the national debt, which on a gross basis was just under 35% of GDP when I was born, and is now at 105% of GDP and projected to exceed its World War II levels. That's about as improvident as you can get.
You blame that on the boomers. Why?
It is the boomers as political actors who presided over the policies that allowed the national debt to become so large. So in the 1970s, there was actually a great deal of hand-wringing over this sort of catastrophic level of debt, 35% of GDP. And 40 years on, the problem is substantially worse, and there's no discussion of the debt whatsoever. In fact, there were no discussions of any long-term problems, problems that were of greatest moment to the young during the course of the election of 2016. And the two candidates, both of whom were boomers, agreed on absolutely nothing, not even where to stand on the stage, save for one thing, and that was an unshakable commitment to senior entitlements.
And why do you think that is? Why do you think that this generation is uninterested in preparing for future generations and is so interested in itself?
One of the key indicators for sociopathy is a lack of empathy. So you just don't care for people other than yourselves. So in the case of Social Security, the Social Security Administration projects the trust fund will be depleted in 2034. But by 2034, the median boomer will be dead, and the same sort of dynamic applies to the national debt, which will reach crisis levels in the next 20 years. And the same logic applies to, or lack thereof, applies to climate, which is a problem whose most significant impacts are expected from the late 2030s on, but any cost of remediation must be borne today and would therefore imperil the entitlements budget. So they're deeply focused on maximizing consumption now without regard to problems that are going to be post-mortem.
But I guess my question is, what made them this way? I mean, in this book, you go back to the very beginning of the boomer generation and say that one thing that was different for them was that they spent a lot more time watching TV, and still do, than other generations.
They were the first generation to be raised permissively. Dr. Spock's book came out in 1946. So did the first mass-produced television from RCA. And the boomers were extremely high consumers of TV. There were some other odd aspects of their upbringing, including exposure to relatively high levels of environmental lead. It was the only generation where bottle feeding was a majoritarian practice. But I think one of the other critical factors was that, especially for the first two-thirds of the baby boomers, they were raised in a time of what seemed like effortless prosperity, where the economy would grow, you know, something like 3%. They would watch new stars be embroidered on the flag as Alaska and Hawaii were added to the Union. Neil Armstrong bounded on the moon. The United States more or less leapt from one great success to another. And that conditioned them to believe that success would be effortless. And I think that's had some significant impacts on the conduct of policy and personal lives.
We're speaking with Bruce Cannon Gibney, whose new book is called A Generation of Sociopaths, How the Baby Boomers Betrayed America. And Bruce Cannon Gibney, what about what happened in the 60s? We know it well, a lot of drug use, sexual liberation, and leading to an increase in divorce. This is the boomer generation.
That's right. So prior generations did not divorce frequently, in substantial part because no-fault divorce wasn't around until 69. But the odd thing is that the boomers actually have higher rates of divorce than even their children at comparable points in the marriage. So their rates of divorce are lower. And that's relevant not because divorce is a moral good or bad per se in any given situation, but because one of the key sociopathic indicators is an inability to form a lasting relationship. And I think divorce certainly falls into that category. As for the 1960s, I think it's time that we dispense with this meretricious rebranding that's gone on, that it was a time of sort of unalloyed moral victories on the part of the boomers. Curiously, it was actually people under 30, that's to say the boomers in the 1960s, who were most pro-war. And that was in part because many boomers had no real expectation that they would serve, thanks to the system of deferments. And the deferments and exemptions were, of course, the fault of prior generations. But the system of deferments shifted the burden towards the disadvantaged. I've also gotten some pushback about, well, didn't we rally for civil rights and the environment and any number of other things? But the chronology for that sort of myth of boomer goodness simply doesn't work. You know, Brown versus Board of Education was not decided by 14-year-olds, and that would have been the oldest boomer at the time. It was decided by nine old white men on the Supreme Court. The Clean Air Act that was passed in 1963, again, that's not a boomer victory.
Well, so would you give the boomers any victories later on when they were in positions and are in positions of power?
Certainly, there are a large number of good boomers. My argument is mainly one about deceleration. So there has been nothing equivalent to the Voting Rights Act and Civil Rights Acts of 1964 and 1965 under boomer tenure. The pace of gains has slowed. There has been stagnation in the convergence between female and male earnings. And the economy itself has slowed. And the slowing of the economy combined with fiscal imbalances perpetrates in many ways a much larger, if harder to see, injustice, and that's intergenerational injustice. So by failing to invest in the foundations of prosperity, which the boomers' parents did do in a very significant way, the boomers have consigned their children and their grandchildren to impoverished futures and also to cleaning up some of their messes, from the environment to infrastructure, to rebuilding the research and development and educational systems of the country.
So if boomers are so terrible, as you describe them, why have they managed to stay in power for so long?
That's straightforward. There are just a lot of them. And the boomers are, from the perspective of policy, all roughly the same age, and they all care about basically the same thing. And that's maintaining the flow of government-intermediated benefits for as long as possible. But because Social Security and Medicare consume such a large fraction of the budget and will consume most of the discretionary budget over the next 20 years, if the boomers can win on this single issue, they win on every other issue. So if there's no room in the budget left over after paying out these entitlements for research and development or for funding free public higher education, something that hasn't existed since the boomers themselves were in college, or for remediating the climate, then the nation loses on all these issues and the boomers win on the single issue that they're most concerned about, which is entitlements.
So do you think that the Generation Xers or the millennials are going to be better? Do you have hope for the future?
I do have hope. Young people do seem to embrace an empathetic agenda, up to and including supporting senior entitlements, I think in part because they've been misled about it. They're certainly much more progressive about climate change and civil rights than the boomers are. So I am hopeful, but it will be some time before they're in control. The boomers still hold 69% of the House. They're obviously in the White House for some time. And they control substantial chunks of the judiciary and the administrative state. So we are going to be living in a boomer America for some time, in part because the policies themselves will carry forward for some time.
That's Bruce Cannon Gibney, who is the author of the book, A Generation of Sociopaths, How the Baby Boomers Betrayed America. Very interesting, controversial, provocative. Bruce, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.